Video computers online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T minus 25 seconds.
Live stream for Q120K.
T minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are go.
T minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanic.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This segment, we're speaking to Mr. Jim DiEugenio from Los Angeles. Hello, Jim.
How you doing, man?
Good. In the research community, I always like to pay tribute to people who have been doing good work, and you had mentioned that something that we had forgot to mention a week or two ago, which was about Mr. Don Thomas.
Yeah, Don Thomas was a Texas-based researcher, and he wrote, a pretty interesting book called Hear No Evil several years ago, which decided to take on Dale Myers and his take on the acoustics evidence. Don did a heroic job trying to revive that Dick DeBelt tape. I can't really think of anybody who did a better effort than he did on that. And overall, his book is pretty interesting. In fact, hold on just a minute. His book, Hear No Evil, is about, it's actually over 600 pages long. It's actually more like 700 pages long. And he has some very interesting chapters. For example, the Tippit shooting. He has a very interesting chapter on that. And he has a very interesting chapter on the ballistics evidence. Okay. And the rearward head snap, okay? He has the phony polygraph that was given to Jack Ruby. And he has a very interesting reconstruction of the assassination at the end of his book. And his book, I believe, I don't agree with everything, but, I don't believe, I hardly agree with hardly anybody's book in toto, okay? But his book was very much worth buying, very much worth reading. And he really took the scientific community apart, okay, on several levels. And I think he did a really decent job on this. So, I don't think he got enough attention myself. The preface to his book was by Rex Bradford. The foreword to his book was by Jim Lazar. Dave Mantic did a review of it for Kennedy's and King, and he generally gave it a good review, although he disagreed with the acoustics evidence. But I should also add that Don did a nice job on the medical evidence also. So I don't think he got enough credit myself. And he passed away and nobody said anything, I don't remember him. Nobody's saying anything. Not even on any of the forums that I frequent. So that's, I just wanted to bring that up.
We'll do a little tribute right now. Now, we met him in, he was on the show in 2010 for his book, Hear No Evil, show number 492. And then in 924 on 2019, he was at the San Francisco presentation. You were there as well, right?
Yes.
Right. So
his book was published in 2010. All right. And now, he did something. Are you going to replay one of those appearances?
I guess I could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you do that?
Yeah. Good.
As a little salute to Don. At a Lancer conference Don did something very interesting. He put up a close-up shot of the so-called stare of death picture, and he blew it up a little bit, and he pointed at Kennedy's hairline, you know, where right where the forehead meets the hairline, and he said, "What is that?" And, you know, there's that little line, that horizontal line across Kennedy's head that nobody's ever been able to figure out what it is. I think one of the House Select Committee witnesses, Robinson, might have said that there was a wound in JFK's hairline. And Don, and that was a very impressive moment, I thought. It was the most dramatic presentation of that evidence that I've ever seen. And there's a lot of people today, of course, who do believe, you know, that there was such a wound. And, of course, the exit out the back. So Don did some very interesting work, and I don't think he ever got enough credit for what he did. It was a really different kind of approach to the evidence, one that was well worth reading. And I'm glad you had him on. All right, let me take some questions. January the 23rd, Barbara S., I'm listening to this show. You read the inquiry about Trump's grasp for new territories, that is Canada, Greenland, and Panama. And let's not forget the new one, which is going to be Gaza. That brought to mind another prophetic book mentioned in the Atlantic magazine, Fletcher Knebel's 1965 book, Night of Camp David, featuring a president suffering a breakdown who lusts for conquest of Canada, among other countries. Apparently, this was also highlighted by Bob Woodward and Rachel Maddox in 2018, but it escaped my attention. The Guardian featured an article on it as well 6 years ago. Okay. No, actually, I wasn't aware of that, actually, about Fletcher Knebel's book, Night of Camp David. I wasn't aware. Boy, that's really interesting, isn't it? And evidently, there was an article about it in The Guardian in 2018, November the 30th. And I guess that she's referring to with Bob Woodard and Rachel. So Len, I guess you're going to be the 51st state, huh?
Oh, okay. No chance in hell.
You know, chance. I really wonder about this guy. I really do. Canada, Greenland, the Panama Canal Zone, and today Gaza. So I guess we're going to have the new American Empire. But I didn't know this thing about Fletcher Knebel. You know, that's really interesting. And you really wonder, you know, is that where Trump got this idea? Wasn't there a movie called Canadian Bacon?
Yeah, there was, with John Candy.
Right.
It was a comedy.
Right. Wasn't that about Canada declaring war on the United States or something?
Yeah.
Maybe that's where he got it. You know, I'd like to know where the guy gets his ideas. Oh, here it is. It is Rachel Maddow, okay, and Bob Woodward, a pulpy thriller about a commander-in-chief losing command of reality, is receiving – oh, it got its re-release. All right, that's really interesting. So this is about 2018. Okay, let me read the opening line here. Nobody in this country can tell a president of the United States that his mind is sick, all right? Well, I guess that's true. And so, yeah, this is a really interesting idea. And so Night of Camp David, it was not made into a film. But I think his other book, 7 Days in May, didn't he write that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and The President's Plane is Missing, all right, also Advise and Consent. See, those books of his were made into films. But, okay, this one was not. But that would have been Sidney Carper. What would Carper make of Trump? I think he's a character, the defense secretary. And that's a heck of a good question. So thank you for that, Barbara. She always brings in interesting stuff. Even stuff that I never heard of. Wow. Okay. All right. Now, this one is January the 26th from Mike Franklin. Forwarding something I sent to Leno Sanek about MSM positioning Jared Posner to be a main commentator on the Trump ordered release of JFK files. Talk about the fox guarding the hen house. Did he sent you these, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's just enough to churn your stomach. Newsmax or whatever channel
okay,
it was.
There's News Nation and NBC.
Yeah.
Really surprised by News Nation towing the lone assassin line. Can already see the MSM gearing up to debunk anything that may come out of the records release. They had these out there within a couple of hours of this signing of the release. Well, here's my question. When did Gerald Posner become an expert on the JFK Act and the JFK files? I mean, come on. His book is from 1993. He wrote it before the JFK Assassinations Record and Review Board even went into existence. So I don't understand this at all. Period. Yeah, well, I do because I know what the MSM is really all about, okay, and I know the way they work, okay, but this is really disgraceful. It's really, you know, I mean, there's so many more people who really know something about the JFK Act, the ARB, and what might be in those files, you know, and they put this guy on? I mean, come on.
Yeah, the good thing is that CNN is at an all-time low. I think last week they had to lay off 200 people, and just nobody believes that crap. And so they're tuning into shows like this, other people, other interests on the JFK assassination on YouTube or whatever, and then, even Joe Rogan or Jimmy Dore or other people. At least you may agree or disagree, but you're getting an honest effort. That's nothing Posner does is honest at all.
Well, Joe Rogan and Andrew Napolitano are responsible for Trump doing what he did in large measure. And I think Bobby Kennedy was probably third. Those are the people who convinced Trump to do what he did. All right, Ron Canazzi, January the 27th. I haven't contacted you in quite a while. I've been keeping up with Kennedy's and King to a degree. Some great stuff recently, as well as the JFK Assassination Chokeholds book. Thank you so much for that, Ron. I think it's a good book. So here's the big question. Trump says he will release all the JFK, RFK, and MLK classified files in 30 to 45 days. Remember what happened last time? Yes, I do, unfortunately. If he does release the documents, how much will they be worth? In other words, will they be complete or will they be heavily redacted or will dozens of pages say something like illegible? What do you think? Well, let's put it this way. I don't think he can do what he did last time, number one, which was delay. And I don't think that these can have any wholesale redactions or illegible copies. I don't think now. On the other hand, I wrote a column about this at my Substack site, okay, and I cross-posted it at Kennedy's and King. Do I think there's going to be any bombshell evidence? No. The CIA has had too long to cull these files, and we know that one of the things that the CIA is good at is making false documents. You know, they have experts in this, you know, who can make them look like they're from 1966 or whatever, their technical services department. So, no, I don't think now I think there will be some interesting stuff in there. And so that's what I expect to come out. You know, some interesting information, not any bombshell information that won't be there. I mean, look, in my column at my Substack site, I mentioned five documents that the MSM took little or no notice of that I think are very, very, very important that have already been released. The thing about Clay Shaw's covert security clearance, which means he was lying about never being associated with the CIA. The two INS agents following David Ferry into Bannister's building and Oswald being there. What's going to be in John Newman's next book, that the Joint Chiefs knew that there were atomic missiles in Cuba and didn't tell Kennedy, all right, because they wanted to put his back up against the wall, about what happened with the autopsy evidence, that is exposing the House Select Committee lying in Volume 7, page 37, about the witnesses at Bethesda disagreeing with the witnesses at Parkland, when in fact the opposite was true, that there was a baseball-sized evulsive hole in the back of Kennedy's head, all right? And the discoveries of Betsy Wolf, that somebody was manipulating Oswald's file as he went to the Soviet Union. Let me repeat that. As he went to the Soviet Union, somebody was manipulating Oswald's file at the agency. Okay? So these are all very, very important discoveries that have already been made. Okay? You know, and see how much you see of them on the MSM. And the answer is next to nothing. All right? Okay, so this is the way the MSM works. Even if there is something very important, they won't acknowledge it, right? And that's why they become, in large part, discredited, you know? And the thing is, they don't care. They would rather be discredited and admit the truth about the Kennedy assassination, all right? And I don't think I'm exaggerating very much about that at all right? Take a look what Peter Jennings did in 2003. That piece of crap special he had on, where he had Dale Myers get on national TV and say the single bullet theory was a single bullet fact. I mean, come on. That is just the most irresponsible journalism I've ever seen in my life. Okay? I mean, come on. There is nothing credible about the single bullet theory any step of the way. Period. Okay, but Peter Jennings wanted to do that. And so he put that on. All right, this is the way that the MSM works. Now, I don't have to talk about Dan Rather or Walter Cronkite, all right, or Tom Brokaw, you know. I mean, those guys all decided that it was more important for them to keep their jobs than it was to tell the truth about the JFK case. So there will be some interesting stuff in those files. According to Andrew Eiler and Paul Blow, I think you had Paul on last week, all right, when they were at the National Archives, there were some very interesting metadata about Oswald in Mexico City on some of those files. So I think there will be some interesting stuff in there. Will the MSM acknowledge it? No, I don't think they will. I mean, we're lucky to get this much attention about the files. So, you know, we will see. All right. Oh, January 24th. PJ Orishok. Hi, Jim. Some questions, if you don't mind. Well, that's what I'm being paid for. Are you optimistic that something of real value be found once the document? Okay, I just answered that question. Should we assume that anything revealing or incriminating has long been removed, or perhaps never filed? That's probably a good possibility. And I've addressed that already. Yes, I think that's a distinct possibility. And his other alternative is that they were never filed. You know, that's a good possibility also. Is there a topic or document that you yourself would be? I would like to see every last document on Mexico City released. I truly believe, as Jim Garrison said a long time ago, you know, through that, we will catch the conscience of the king. And what he was referring there to, of course, was Hamlet, in where Hamlet puts on the play within a play depicting the murder of his father, you know, and his stepfather walks out. And that's how he thinks that, and he's right, that his stepfather had something to do with his father's killing. All right, so I believe that Mexico City is a very, very, very important part of the equation. Jim Garrison once said that he had one corner of the equation in New Orleans. He said the other three corners were Dallas, Mexico City, and Washington. You know, it was like a big rectangle. That's the way the conspiracy went down. And I agree with that. I agree with that. Will this document release only apply to the documents investigated by the ARB? Or might this applied to anything still classified, redacted, as in, say, the church committee, or anything still hidden in Oswald's IRS records, or who ordered the destruction of Secret Service force, for example. I think it's going to be essentially the ARB. Now, in my article, if you read it over on my Substack, you'll see that there's three congressmen who are trying to get Trump to expand that executive order to say that if anything in these declassified documents points to something else, then he should embody a board to go ahead and find that document also and request that it be declassified. I think that's a very good idea. Would the federal government really, as far as IRS records, there has to be a special order for that also. Another thing I would like to see is the stuff that Jackie Kennedy put away in her deed of gift, her communications about Lyndon Johnson over a death of a president, the Manchester book. I'd like to see those declassified also. Would the federal government really have anything relevant on RFK at this point? Lisa Peace says that there were communications between the CIA and the LAPD on the RFK case. And she said she would really like to see those. Because, you know, there were Hernandez and Pena, who ran Special Unit Senator, were former CIA officers. So she says that there probably are documents there about communications between Langley and those two guys. Do you think that any Army intelligence or surveillance documents record might still exist on the King assassination? Yes. And I think that not only that, but the HSCA did an inquiry into the King case. And a lot of their stuff is going to be in there also. They didn't declassify everything, you know, just like they did on the JFK case. So there's going to be some stuff on MLK. I don't think there's really any question about that. So, see, what Trump did is salutary on this. I think we have to thank him for that. What's going to be the litmus test is the follow-through on this. Is there going to be a follow-through? You know? And I'm going to try and stay in touch with Andrew Napolitano and Joe Rogan, okay, and Bobby Kennedy if there isn't. There really should be a follow-through on this. It shouldn't be just done for stage effect, okay? All right, so let's hope that Trump goes all the way on this.
Yeah, well, he had a major blow today where they defunded USAID, you know, and it's their international wing. They had more money going than the State Department and CIA. I mean, they just had billions. That was just groundbreaking. Like, I couldn't believe he did that. They just went in and said, "You guys are just spending money."
That wasn't Trump. That was Musk.
Right, but I mean, on behalf of Trump, Trump sent him in there, right, to say, like, where's all this money going? And he said they're just all blowing it on paying off, you know, revolutions around the world, color revolutions from, I think, 2005 all the way up to 2014 in Ukraine and just everywhere. And they shut it down. So, you know, who knows?
Well, not only that. They told the employees not to show up anymore. You know, they took down their website. And, you know, I agree with you. A lot of that stuff that USAID was doing was pretty bad stuff. I mean, they sponsored a lot of what they call NGOs.
Non-governmental organization.
Right.
That, you know, the government's not allowed to really be doing this, but here, if you want to put in $5 billion into destabilizing a country, then they do it. They pay off unions, they buy some propaganda, they rent a riot. Yeah.
Now, I hope you know, JFK started that. He started the USAID, except he used it as direct aid, food and medicines, etc., to third world countries. Because he wanted to be able to compete with the Russians, okay? He wanted to go to NASA and say, look, whatever he gives you, I'll give you more if you stay neutral. And so that's what he was using it for. But over time, as you mentioned, it became a sponsorship of these NGOs. And as time went on, as Robert Perry said, it began to be too obvious for the CIA to do all these overthrows. And so what they did is they put a lot of this money into these NGOs and the National Endowment for Democracy, one of the worst titled organizations I've ever heard of. Okay, and as you mentioned, they poured a lot of money into Ukraine, $5 billion, okay, according to the woman who should be an expert, Victoria Nuland. She said they put $5 billion into starting the Maidan, okay, the overthrow of the properly elected Ukrainian government, all right? And that went on for years on end, okay, until finally, you know, it exploded when they said they were going to enter into NATO. There's a really good book on that by a guy named Scott Horton called Provoked.
Yeah, I mean to get that.
Okay, you're aware of it.
Yeah, all right, good. Yeah, and my favorite source of information is Mike Benz, who's the
right,
former
you told me
State
about
Department.
Him, yes.
Yeah, and he's – but we don't have to get into that right now, but it is of interest that at least – Trump's administration is doing something. And if Bobby Kennedy Jr. comes forward with what they're doing to make food healthy again, or at least try to get it neutrals, I mean, Tulsi, I mean, when I watched Elizabeth Warren and Bernie taking on these guys in the Senate confirmation hearings, it was so pathetic. I lost all respect for them. I mean, did you watch any of it? I couldn't believe
yes.
it.
Yes.
You know,
I really liked it when Bobby Kennedy told Bernie, you take over $1 million a year from Big Pharma. Okay.
The guy freaked out. No. And he said, no, yes, you do. Like, you knew that Bobby Kennedy Jr. had his facts there. It says, you take 1.2, you're the highest paid grifter here. Mm-hmm. I mean, the nerve you have. I mean, from what he should have been to how they pulled the rug out from under him, and then he just became like a little barking toy dog, you know, just.
Now, and then I couldn't believe what Elizabeth Warren said. Elizabeth Warren accused him of taking money from pharma. Well, that's because when he sues these companies, okay, he did all the groundwork on these lawsuits. And so he gets, you know, like any lawyer, he gets a percentage. Okay. And there's a big difference between doing that and being on the take, you know, from Big Pharma.
And if anybody hasn't heard this, you really need to hear it just so you can kind of – you know, you're going to sit down, you're going to need a chair. You're going, I can't believe, what are they saying? You know, and she's going, will you guarantee from now on, you will not take one penny from Big Pharma? And, you know, right? Right? And he's saying, well, if we sue them and they're found guilty, and I think Pfizer had the biggest lawsuit settlement in history against them, you know? So whatever law firm.
I thought it was Monsanto.
Well, they're close. Neck
they're
and neck,
close,
right?
I agree, yeah. Bobby Kennedy was the first person to successfully sue Monsanto. Okay. I don't think very many people know that. But he blazed the trail. Okay. And then these other companies jumped on, you know, his wagon. All right.
Right, to the fact that they kind of, I don't know if they've changed their name, but Bayer bought them out. Bayer took them over, right?
Yeah.
And, oh, God, the whole thing was sickening.
Isn't it incredible? This is so stunning. You know, when you think about this, Bobby Kennedy had to be the most successful environmental lawyer of the 20th century. Okay? What that guy did to clean up the Hudson River, to clean up so many lakes and ponds and rivers throughout the United States, how his group, the Water Keepers, how they expanded throughout the country because so many people were inspired by all the great work he did, you know? And then to completely forget about that, to completely forget about that, like it just went down the drain, you know? And, you know, Bobby, I will say this. In retrospect, if he was going to run for president, he should have never written that book. Okay?
The real Anthony Fauci?
Yeah, because Fauci had, even though, I mean, everybody knows what Fauci did with AIDS, right? You do, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Dallas Buyers Club, right?
The whole AZT thing?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, let's just urge everyone to get that book. Because, you know, like Joe Rogan said, he put it down a few times. He just couldn't believe that all the stuff he was saying there, that Fauci didn't try to sue him back. And as he finally finished the book, he goes, oh, my God. And then Biden, on the way out, pardons Fauci. Pardons everybody in his family.
That's true. Right.
You're back to 2014. Right. And then, you know, I've got this meme on my Facebook page. So what's so important about 2014? What happened then, you know? I mean, it is really sickening. So although there's a couple of things like the JFK records that we want to see what's going on, and we're watching that, and we're, I don't know, you know, maybe naively optimistic, thinking, I hope there's something. Meanwhile, you know, Trump is doing something, and, you know, it's really, for those who don't really like Trump, you know, it's hard to become his cheerleader or anything. You go, holy shit, did you see what he did to USA aid today? You know, and did he, you know, and then these hearings, if he gets Tulsi Gabbard in there. You know, the other thing about Tulsi, did you see the way they were going after her about, is Snowden a traitor? Is he a traitor? You know, and they just were relentless. I mean, I had to go on like on a 3-4 hour car ride. And so I put that whole thing on and I was listening to it. And it was pathetic.
It was ridiculous. I mean, look. Everybody remembers, doesn't everybody remember Henry David Thoreau and his civil disobedience?
Well, for those who don't know, just briefly describe that.
He wrote a book on this subject that if the law is wrong, then you should protest it, even if you have to go to jail to do it. He was really the first Gandhi. And then Emerson, his friend, Ralph Waldo Emerson, went to visit him in jail. And he said, Henry, what are you doing in there? And Thoreau said, what are you doing out there? Okay, so that's the way I look at what Snowden did. Okay? An act of civil disobedience. That's what it was. I don't think he was being a traitor.
No, not at all. And all right. Every time they tried to say, oh, somebody was harmed or people lost their lives because of this, it didn't happen at all. And, you know, with Glenn Greenwald and, you know, the way they release things slowly every day, the guy would come on Clapper and those guys would lie. And then the next day they'd release something. And it was just embarrassment after embarrassment, which was they're lying. And what he exposed is the unlawful nature of government, that they're totally lying. They're breaking the law. And yet they're after him and somebody like Julian Assange. And they want them labeled a traitor when he should be welcomed home as someone who was a truth teller, you know, to a crooked, evil government that, you know, like I've seen many memes of saying, why do you have to pardon the guy if he hasn't even been charged with anything? Like, what do you know that we don't know that these guys got to be pardoned?
I totally agree with that. You know, Assange and Snowden. Okay, we're not traitors in the least. It's just that what they were saying was so dangerous to the police state. I mean, look, we would have never known all the things that Hillary Clinton was doing as Secretary of State. It wasn't for Julian Assange. The whole thing with Libya, the whole thing with Syria, all those speeches he was giving to Wall Street, you know, $250,000 a crack.
And then the one that I really am pissed off at is the 51 State Department intelligence agents that all signed that the Hunter Biden
laptop. The Hunter Biden thing, yeah.
Russia Gate, Russian disinformation. Just beyond fraud. So the fact that all these people got fired today, and like you mentioned, they were told don't show up for work. I just chuckle. I go, well, you know, it's about time. It's about time. But anyway.
Well, see, you know, it's a very clever move by Musk and Trump, because it kind of puts the Democrats in a box. You know what I'm saying? Because how can you really defend most of that stuff? I mean, they do some good. I mean, Bill Gates was on The View today talking about some of the good things that USAID did in the form of, you know, medicines.
Yeah, yeah, but he's damage control. I mean, when you look into what they really went on, Dave Smith and a few other people, Mike Benz and even Jimmy Dore was talking about it with Kurt Metzger yesterday. I mean, it's jaw-dropping, and it's the tip of the iceberg. People have no idea what was going on there.
Well, remember, Bobby Kennedy's book had Bill Gates as a subtitle. So that's something really to – and I have to say, even Rand Paul looked pretty good. I mean, let's put it this way. When the Democrats make the Republicans look good in the hearings, that's really saying something. The whole thing about science and how we can't challenge science, okay? Well, yes, you can. I mean, come on.
Oh, that was sickening, that lady that was talking like that.
I mean,
like,
the only way
get,
you make
know, we get some things wrong, we get them wrong, but you can't come after us because we need to talk the public into letting them know that everything we're doing is right. And then in the next sentence, she says, yes, but we do get things wrong. It says, well, then, you know, it's the only medicine that you can't sue. That take that off. If you've had adverse reactions and you sue the manufacturer, they'll get it straight before they release it. And then, you know, the whole sickening thing about it came from a wet lab and a pangolin and all this and that. You can laugh now, right? But I mean, they were kicking people off of YouTube and Facebook for saying that. And then they were saying, if he called it the China virus, then you find out that the national NIH, whatever it was, they funded it. They funded it, the whole thing. I mean,
right.
So
Rand Paul wanted Fauci indicted for contempt of Congress. Okay. That whole thing about gain of function, not being at the Wuhan lab. Okay. I mean, oh, boy. Fauci told a whopper on that one, you know. So,
and he's yelling back to him saying, you do not know what you're talking about.
Right.
I mean, that the whole thing is just – I mean, now there's reports that the CIA were watching the lab, and I think the first five or six people working there that got sick, and they had aerial photographs of the parking lots and that and how the lab was shut down. You can look into it if you want, right? Yeah. But they knew what was going on.
Rand Paul said on I don't know how he ever got this on a Sunday morning show, okay, that Bill Gates actually digs up these viruses. He has his guys go 300 miles away from a populated center, you know, and Paul said he thinks he's doing something good, okay, mutating these viruses, but he's really not, okay, you know. So, you know, that whole thing, you know, that was put up by the MSM, by the government, et cetera, you know, that we couldn't question science, you know, et cetera. Look, I know an epidemiologist. She told me. She has a PhD from Washington State University, which is one of the best schools for that there is in the country. I asked her, how long does it take to perfect a vaccine? She said, anywhere from 3 to 7 years. I said, 3 to 7 years? She said, yes. And by the way, 3 years is a very short time, you know, to perfect a vaccine. All right. So, and let me say also this. I was fully vaccinated. Let me repeat that. I was fully vaccinated. I got CV-19 not once, but twice. Okay? So if people have some questions, you know, about not challenging science, I think they're in the short end. That's not the right attitude to take. Let me close it off with this. Nobody believed that you could develop a jet plane that would break the sound barrier. Okay, nobody believed it. And pilots were asking for $150,000 to try and do it because they thought they would disintegrate. Okay? All right, well, we know what happened there. All right? Okay, so let's not put this, you know, on some kind of pedestal. All right? So anyway, so let's go to the next question.
Yeah.
We're going to get letters for this, Len.
Oh, I don't mind. No, really, all you have to do to tell people is say, listen, for your own information, watch these hearings and the questioning that went on. And, you know, decide for yourself if it's sickening.
All right, John Barbaro. Hello, Len and Jim. As I always say first when I write in, thank you, Len, for all these years of BOR. A question for Jim and you, Len, if I may. Could you share your thoughts about Jeremy Gunn? Have either of you read his deposition of Prouty from the ARB? And I remember Jim saying several times he was supposed to be in the four-hour documentary. What happened? Okay, John Barbaro, Rochester, New York, home of Kodak Hawkeye Works. Now just a shuttered and empty huge relic on St. Paul Street, closed years ago. All right, Jeremy Gunn. I wrote an article about Fletcher Prouty and his bushwhacking by the ARB, which Jeremy Gunn, unfortunately, was a part of. And thanks to Malcolm Blunt, we managed to expose that farce for what it was. Other people who actually took it seriously, like Fred Litwin, all right, were exposed by that article. And I had Len's help on that also. Okay, I think it's called Fletcher Prouty versus the ARB. All right.
Right, and there's a good video clip of Malcolm Blunt explaining how they found documents, and then they looked into it, and he goes, these guys have been called up for duty, and they're there to embarrass and dig up dirt. They're not there to investigate anything.
Right, and they both left, by the way, before the ARB. The two guys who masterminded that ambush both left before the expiration of the ARB. As far as Jeremy Gunn not being in the long version of JFK Revisited, we tried everything to get him on. I mean, we did, because he lives in North Africa. He teaches at the University of Morocco. Okay. And we said, okay, we'll pay your way over. Okay. And that would not have been a cheap ticket. All right. And so, for whatever reason, the producer, Rob Wilson, could not get him timed correctly for him to be in the show. And it's not, you know, and I it's not like Jeremy was overeager to be in the show. Okay. All right. I don't know. See, and I very much disagree with what he's done since he left, because one of the things they were supposed to do was outreach, you know, to the public. Doug Horn has done a great job of that. All right. As far as I know, Jeremy Gunn has done one speech at this small college in New England, and I think it's on YouTube. And it wasn't very informative, I don't think, compared to what that guy knows, because he was the chief counsel for the ARB for a number of years. So he knows as much as Doug Horn does. All right. So I'm kind of disappointed in Jeremy Gunn, to be frank about it. All right.
Well, let's just add to that. Then does that give you any speculation that he was, you know, as you hear these people in the heads of the ARB, that they were thinking that there was a lone gunman, that it was Lee Oswald, and they didn't want to dig up?
No, I don't think Jeremy is like that. And I take that on the word of Doug Horn. Okay, that Jeremy was not like that. He was not closed-minded. And his deposition of John Stringer, was probably one of the most important, if not the most important, deposition that the ARB did. And according to Doug Horn, Jeremy worked very hard on planning that deposition, and he more or less set Stringer up, and then he said, okay, we got you on the record saying this, this, and this. Now I want you to look at the evidence. Does this match up with what you said? And he said, no. Okay, and
for people who don't know about that, can you just give a little brief background?
All right, John Stringer was the official autopsy photographer, okay, on the JFK case, all right? He was called in by Horn and Gunn to do a deposition. And this shows you, by the way, how bad the House Select Committee was, because they never got this far, all right? And so he got him on the record. He goes, what kind of film did you use? What kind of technique did you use? What kind of photographic technique did you use? All right. And he went down a whole list of all these questions. He said, good. Okay, now I'm going to take you in this room. These are the photographs you were supposed to have taken. I want you to go up there and take a very close look and tell me if this matches your testimony. And he says, that's ANSCO. I didn't use ANSCO film. You know, and then he said, see these numbers here? These pictures were taken in the press pack. They were taken in series. I didn't do that. I never did that. And then Jeremy Gunn asked him, are you ready to say then that you didn't take these pictures? And Stringer said, if that's a press pack and that's ANSCO, I didn't take these pictures. Okay. That was a bombshell, because obviously then the question is, if you didn't take them, who did? And why did somebody else have to take another set of pictures? So that's what I mean. He did a very good job on that one. All right. Okay, Paul for God, this will be the last question.
And just the final addition to that, the only reason I was a little skeptical about Jeremy is I think – he was on with Marina Oswald on an episode of Oprah. Do you remember that?
That wasn't Jeremy Gunn.
Oh, okay. Who was that?
That was Thunheim.
Oh, I stand corrected. Right. Because okay. I saw that and I was thinking, gee, these guys are up there and they're being kind of confrontational. And Marina's saying, well, release records. Release this. Do something. Do something. And the guy just sat there.
Yeah, yeah. I don't. I remember that. That was Thunheim.
Yeah, Judge Thunheim, okay. Yeah.
All right. I read the article about the Pepe letters and am now listening to Paul Blow on Black Op. I have a couple of questions. First, after the Bay of Pigs, do you think the hardliners in both America and Russia could have been working behind the scenes to set up the Cuban Missile Crisis as a Northwoods operation type of situation? The plotters would have hoped that JFK would respond in a more assertive fashion than he did with the Bay of Pigs. But when that did not happen, the assassination was next. All right. I don't believe the hardliners in Russia were part of this. And in fact, Khrushchev installed those missiles against the advice of a lot of people, okay, inside of Moscow. They were essentially just following his orders. It was a very bad gamble on his part. Now, do I believe there were hardliners? In the United, like I just said. The Pentagon seems to have known about it before, and they wanted to force JFK's back up against the wall. So in that sense, in a very loose sense, yeah, I agree, it could have been looked at as a Northwoods type of operation. All right. Second, as for the Pepe letters and the fake letters from Oswald, has anybody ever researched whether the people who we suspect were involved with the 1963 America regime change, used the same MO and other regime changes around the world? Were there other sets of letters used to paint a false picture and other regime changes that the CIA was behind? I think that might be another area of investigation that might reveal more as to what happened in 1963. Thanks for all you do. You know, that's a really good question.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too. Yeah.
That's a really good question. Because I think, if I remember correctly, Phillips did do this in Chile during the overthrow of Allende. I don't think they were actually letters. They were like posters that he had put up saying something the effect, Jakarta is coming, which of course was a reference to what happened in Indonesia, okay, in 1965, because he was in on that also, all right? And then he more or less masterminded the overthrow of Allende. Okay, so it's not quite the same thing. That's really a good question, and maybe you should ask Paul that, Len. You know, maybe you should email him or something like that. You know, I love getting these very intelligent questions that I can't even answer. Okay, Len.
All right.
Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Yeah, thank you very much for making time.
Okay, have
and
a good night.
And as people who write in, they often say thank you for your contribution and for your time.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
All right, you too. Good night.